Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So Nikki Haley came on right after we did yesterday to make it official. She stopped short of endorsing Trump and issued a challenge for him to woo her voters.
In all likelihood, Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee when our party convention meets in July. I congratulate him and wish him well. I wish anyone well who would be America's president. Our country is too precious to let our differences divide us. I have always been a conservative Republican and always supported the Republican nominee. But on this question, as she did on so many others, Margaret Thatcher provided some good advice when she said, quote, never just follow the crowd. Always make up your own mind. It is now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of those in our party and beyond it who did not support him. And I hope he does that. At its best, politics is about bringing people into your cause, not turning them away. And our conservative cause badly needs more people. This is now his time for choosing. I end my campaign with the same words I began it, from the book of Joshua. I direct them to all Americans, but especially to so many of the women and girls out there who put their faith in our campaign. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. For God will be with you wherever you go. In this campaign, I have seen our country's greatness. From the bottom of my heart, thank you, America. God bless you.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Boy, that's really, really throwing down the gauntlet. Wait. I mean, she is just a completely empty vessel. She talks like I imagine the first iteration of AI would talk if it was in robotic form. It's just sort of one cliche, one platitude after another with sort of a halting stop to make sure you fully take in the wisdom of advice like don't follow the crowd. Wow.
I begin profound. My campaign as I end it, reading from the book of Joshua. No, I, you know, and the sad thing is I was a huge Nikki Haley supporter from the beginning. And then she turned into sort of like a Chris Christie in her rhetoric and her hate and toward Donald Trump.
I don't think Chris Christie. I think she's, you know, I wasn't wowed by Nikki Haley. She was a mediocre governor of a conservative state. She could have been much better than she was. U.S. ambassador to the U.S. UN. Ambassador. I mean, you're a functionary. You know, you're a...
Well, at least
you
get to meet world leaders. I mean, it's not like she was...
Yawn. I mean, they're so impressive, aren't they? All these world leaders. Who's impressed?
312-642-5600. That's our phone line. Turnkey.pro answer line, don't you know? 64636, that's our text line. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
U.S. ambassador to the U.N., so you mill about with other... water boys and water girls for other regimes, mostly in places that we would never want to live. And somehow this is to greatly elevate your gravitas when it comes to international relations and geopolitics. It's just another fraud that they sell. And it really it's really illustrated by Nikki Haley's campaign. To me, she shrank in the moment. She became another stale candidate reciting trite phrases from a bygone era and playing cheap identity politics, which is on the other side of the field, as you just heard, the girls and the women, because, you know, I'm a woman and I was once a girl.
Quoting
Margaret Thatcher. If you're going to quote Margaret Thatcher, at least pick something of import that she said. The idea that she is some sort of protege of Margaret Thatcher is laughable. But if you know anything about Margaret Thatcher's reign in England, but it's just the whole thing was, you know, had the depth of a cookie tray, which is how Nikki Haley presented herself to me. You're playing. I mean, this is one of the cardinal sins that conservatives can commit, playing identity politics at this time. On the one hand, where there's this general recognition that identity politics is balkanizing, it is decivilizing, and it is a real threat to the republic. On the other hand, it's okay when I play it.
She did make history, Dan, as the first Republican woman to win a primary contest in D.C.
I know, and Caitlin Clark is the all-time scorer in NCAA basketball history. Right. It could just... It's total silliness. The other thing, too, is the combination of vacuousness and hubris, which is a terrible combination. The idea that, you know, she controls the people who voted for her. So now you got to come to me and to my people. They're not your people. They voted for you for a number of reasons. They didn't like Trump. They wanted to protest this. They wanted to protest that. You don't control them. If you say thou shalt, they don't follow. I mean, some will, a small percentage, but you don't control those votes. The idea that any politician really controls his constituency, so few politicians have coattails because they can't really direct people who vote for them to do something else. It's like the people are making up their own minds in context, in the moment, with the circumstances. So, yeah, I know Trump has a loyal base and he can move people and he's one of the rare exceptions. But it's still even much smaller than those who are voting for him. Many who vote for Trump, as they have the previous two times, will do so begrudgingly. And that still counts. But don't be under the delusion that these are your loyalists. And if you tell them to jump, they say how high. That's not how it works.
Well, who's going to come to who? Is Nikki Haley? Do you think we're going to see her in Mar-a-Lago in a few weeks with her thumbs up standing next to President Trump? Or does Trump have to come to her to earn the support of her voters?
Nobody has to come to anybody. This is like phony photo op stuff that the D.C. press corps dreams up to fill time. Nobody has to come to anybody. You want to come and endorse them? Fine. You don't? Fine. That couldn't matter less. Trump will make his appeal to the wider electorate, which includes Nikki Haley voters, the same way, whether they have this moment of coming together or not.
One of her supporters, like, now that she's out of the race, this is what I heard. Now that she's out of the race, I'm going to have to vote for Biden.
Yeah, right. Whatever. Yeah. So there'll be some of that. But, you know, there's the cross currents. I mean, these anecdotes and these vignettes of a friend and somebody I saw interviewed on NBC News. They mean absolutely nothing. The only thing I would say is the one thing I do agree is it is incumbent on the victor to be the unifying force. It is incumbent on the victor to make the overtures they want to make or suffer the consequences. So if there's anybody who has to make appeals to individual principles or to core constituencies, it is Trump's responsibility. Bob in Paloma, Michigan.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Now, you were talking to Steve Moore yesterday about shrinkflation.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't start under Biden. It started approximately 40 years or more ago because they've been stealing the product out of the chip bags and lunch meats and things like that for a very long time. And the other thing is about the polls.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
They show... President Trump with a slight lead over Biden. Unfortunately, Biden has about a 90-point advantage among the deceased and fictitious voters.
Thanks for the call, Bob. By the way, does Bob from Paloma, Michigan sound like Vincent Price, or is it me?
Yes, he does. I want to talk about 40-year-old shrinkflation, Dan.
I want to talk to George Costanza about that. I should have had him say this is Thriller.
One can escape the evil of the Thriller.
Yeah. Not bad.
Is that not bad?
It's not bad. Vince in Crete.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Is it just me, or does Nikki Haley come off sounding like a mom reading her kids a fairy tale bedtime story whenever she talks to people?
Yeah, that's not bad. Yeah, good. It does have that feel. Yeah, that's good, Vince.
Cozy on in, everybody.
Yeah, right.
Everything's so nice and pleasant.
Yeah. I'm sure she reads Introducing Teddy, like the Kansas City mayor does. Dennis in Milwaukee.
Yeah, good morning, Dan and Andy. As always, you have sagacious insights. And,
sagacious, good word.
There you go, calling out Nikki Haley. The whole time I thought she was an empty suit. And, no new ideas, really lacking any leadership panache. Not exciting at all. I really think she realized her pathway to the nomination ended with the SCOTUS decision last week, because I really think the rich people supporting her, for the establishment Republicans that were out there, were looking for, a hedged bet in case he did end up being disqualified on legal terms. But I think the reality is he's going to probably be exonerated or not pursued in most of this. We'll see how that plays out. But I really think she was a hedged bet, but an empty suit.
Thanks for the call, Dennis. And we're off to a hot start this morning. We had Sagacious and Panache in the same call.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630. And learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So Trump stays on the March 19th ballot in Illinois, and that would include Cook County. Sorry, Traffic Court Judge Tracy Porter.
Yeah. So does
BLM Brandon's Bring Chicago Home ballot question.
I know.
Yeah, what a surprise.
Well, it was already on the ballot, then an appellate court judge said, no, take it off. Well, you can't take it off, but that the votes are not going to matter, but now the votes are going to matter again.
Right. What, as I said, what a surprise that ultimately it wasn't going to be knocked off the ballot. Do you want to allow the Chicago City Council to raise the tax when properties are valued above $1 million are sold, and lower for properties sold under the amount? That's basically the gist of it. Raise it above $1 million, lower it for properties sold under that amount. So properties, not just residential. I wonder what kind of impact that will have on the already faltering commercial real estate market. I digress. It's going to fund homelessness prevention.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because all homeless people want homes, right? Yeah.
I'm on board. That would definitely include our migrant friends. I certainly hope so. Don't you?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You could text us at 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. Mayor Johnson was excited. He celebrated.
It's a different day for Chicago. That's a good thing.
good thing, Dan.
Yeah, no, this is because it's a pathway not only to ending homelessness, and you think, oh, the homeless of Chicago. Well, the homeless who come to Chicago, too, that are living in migrant camps, for example. And don't they have a March 16th vacate date? Will that get extended again? I sure hope so. California moved legislation, and so you can expect this coming from the Illinois General Assembly. Just thought you should know, since we're talking about whether or not to vote for this Bring Chicago Home referendum. And I don't know about you, but if I could vote in Chicago again, I'd vote for it. Why not? It's what they want.
I'm thinking about voting for it.
What exactly?
I want to screw my liberal neighbors over.
What do you mean? Screw this is a no.
Live in the mansions.
I'm giving you an opportunity to cure homelessness. I'm supporting your efforts in Lakeview, the Lakeview owners of said mansions, to end homelessness. Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Be better. Step up. Now's your time to do something for the community. Pay more taxes.
There's a program for first-time homeowners, home buyers, in the state of California that was animated by state legislation. Zero interest, zero monthly payment mortgages equal to 20% of a home or condo's value, and you only have to pay off the loan when the house is sold or refinanced. Well, zero interest, zero monthly payment equal to zero monthly payment mortgages equal to 20% of the home or condo's value. You only have to pay off the loan when the house is sold or refinanced, and you only have to pay up to 20% of the profit. 20% of the increase in purchase price when you sell back to this program.
Okay.
The loans don't accrue interest, don't require monthly payments. Again, when the mortgage is refinanced or the house is sold again, the borrower pays back the original amount of the loan plus 20% of the increase in the home's value. That's the program. And what the State Assembly in California is on the cusp of doing is extending that to people in the country illegally. And so I would think, you know, we do something like that here for first-time home buyers, because that's certainly one way to end homelessness, is subsidize people to buy homes. We have to welcome the newcomers and include them in any sort of program like this, too. So, I mean, I just see this as a gateway to mirroring California, which, you know, we'll want to do here in the Midwest because we want to maintain our status as a thoughtful, cosmopolitan, welcoming city and state, don't we?
Well, don't forget about the CTU. According to their new list of demands, they want revenues from Bring Chicago Home real estate tax hike for housing assistance for CTU members.
Well, yeah, as I said, I mean, so everybody. So this is my point.
Well, they don't want to be, you know, overshadowed by migrants.
No, we don't overshadow. We include.
Oh.
We're being inclusive. Mm-hmm. I think you need to update your glossary of terms and use the proper nomenclature before you get in trouble. So, yeah, this would certainly wouldn't be limiting. No, it would be including. We're broadening it.
Well, who else should we put on the list? So we've got homeless. That's what it's for originally. Then the migrants because they're homeless. And then CTU teachers and CTU employees that are homeless. I don't know what kind of a big population that is, but I'm sure there are some. So we got to house them.
Well, I basically say anybody making less than $100,000 a year, anybody with household income less than $100,000 a year, that should all be underwritten by those making $100,000 a year. And look, I'm not smart enough to come up with this, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm deferring to the public policy leadership that has been selected by the residents of Chicago and the residents of the state of Illinois, for that matter. Brandon Johnson. Right. That the $100,000 threshold. Remember that? Well, that's back. The $100,000 to impose a city income tax. Freshman Alderman William Hall is BLM Branded's point man or point human on this project of looking for new revenue, not just the Bring Chicago Home referendum. That's a great start, but we're going to need some more. So, video gaming. We don't have that in Chicago yet. Why not?
Why you have gambling here, so why not video gaming?
Exactly.
Like they expanded, do in the suburbs.
Expanded helicopter service to and from O'Hare and Midway. turning vacant downtown real estate space into a digital advertising space. Yeah.
Can I do my chopper impersonation? Did you get it?
Yeah, it's a great little Letterman bit you do there.
Did he do that? I thought I made that up.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's billions. Carl Sagan saw billions and billions of stars. Bill and Brandon sees billions and billions of dollars that are not on the table that should be.
What about legalizing prostitution then?
Sure.
Since there's a bunch of hoes walking around, you know.
Well,
make shaking your money maker, honey.
Well, let me let you crawl inside the mind of alderhuman William Hall to give you a sense of the moral case to be made for all of these things that you're describing and I'm describing. Billionaires and millionaires are not even paying taxes, says Mr. Hall. It makes no sense that a mother who's making $45,000 to $50,000 a year working two jobs, robbing Peter to pay Paul. What does Peter have to say about that? Hoping that an iPad would keep her kids occupied is paying more taxes than, you know, Ken Griffin and company. Well, actually, they left.
He's not paying taxes to you.
We have to make sure there's a fair distribution of taxes, period, said Hall. Period, full stop. Fair tax rate that is not at all fair right now because... meaning we don't have a city income tax. So that's not fair because millionaires and billionaires know how to work a tax code while those who are working day to day do not. The middle class is a trick to keep you occupied. Either you got it or you don't got it. Give me that. And when I look at my community where the average income is $47,652 and they're paying higher taxes than a millionaire and billionaire, that is not right. He was asked also about a wealth tax on stock holdings. Absolutely. Not just the city income tax for more than 100 grand. Wealth tax on stock holdings is something they'd like to look at, and liquid assets that he claims are passing wealth into trust funds. Oh, my goodness. Could you imagine? Great. You know, these trust fund babies that are getting away with squirreling away resources and offshore accounts. I mean, enough about J.B. Pritzker.
None of his business. Yeah.
No, exactly. No, I don't want to bring J.B. Pritzker into this because I'm sure Bill Hall doesn't want to either. Maybe, maybe taxing the trust funds of statewide elected officials in the Cayman Islands. I don't know. Trust fund babies, says William Hall.
Bahamas, yes.
Trust fund babies get away with not paying their fair share, but using services to increase their lifestyle. And that's not fair. We need tax parity, tax equity. And, I mean, Jelly Belly Pritzker, I'm sure, would volunteer to be the change that Bill Hall wishes to see. Won't you? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 646-36DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Time to face reality. The retail model has changed, said Bill Hall. Bill Hall has a lot to say, if he doesn't mind me calling him Bill. The shuttered stores aren't coming back. Glad he's conceding the retail decimation of Magma. They're not coming back. They're empty spaces that could make money for Chicago, just like New York City is making millions of dollars in digital marketing in Times Square. There you go. That is the vision.
A big billboard. Yep.
Turn Bullmish into Times Square. Big, gaudy digital billboards that put money into the coffers at City Hall. And you say there's no good ideas being bandied about.
Text message, Dan and Amy, the program will do for homelessness what the Illinois State Lottery has done for Illinois schools.
Yeah, exactly. Solve the funding problem. Exactly. And then remember, after we instituted the lottery, we've never talked about school funding since?
No.
Nobody's ever clamored for an increase in school funding because we solved it with the lottery.
And the toll roads were supposed to go away, I do recall.
Now we're solving homelessness with the surcharge on million-dollar properties, and we're going to solve all kinds of other societal ills with making the Mag Mile Times Square and introducing a city income tax on people making more than 100K and taxing people's stock holdings and other liquid assets and... I mean, all kinds of stuff we can do, video gaming and prostitution and taxing helicopter rides between O'Hare and Midway and so
forth. Is that really needed?
needed.
I mean, the helicopter, but maybe from O'Hare to downtown, like they do in, you know, South America, like Brazil. That's how you can get from the top of your hotel to the airport, so you don't sit in the car for 3 hours.
He talked about video gaming too. Did Alder Human Hall in this wide ranging conversation? Boy, I mean, he really had a lot to get off his chest, and I appreciate it. Talking about video gaming, absolutely be part of the revenue mix because most neighborhood bars want it, and their patrons do. Well, the bar owners particularly do because they can, yeah, that's a nice income flow. Yeah. Anyway, he says this, when you look at neighboring suburbs like Cicero and Burbank, they have those.
Yeah, so does
exactly.
Cool.
Don't you want downtown to look more like Cicero and Burbank?
Stop it.
What a great
idea.
Every
video gaming's everywhere in the suburbs. I'm like, why exactly. Is that old lady still sitting there? And then days later, like, that old lady's still sitting there. Oh, it's video gaming. I didn't even know they had it. Now it's everywhere.
Someday, Mag Mile will be referred to as Cicero on the Lake. That'll be a
Burbank
happy day.
Burbank Boulevard. Hey.
Right?
Yeah.
That's an upgrade. Have you driven down Cermak lately?
They could put, you know what? Water Tower Place could just be one big video gaming hall. There's nothing
slash migrant center slash brothel.
Oh,
yeah, I mean, it's it could be multi-purpose.
There you go. And then you'll have the American Girl doll store down to the right.
Think big. Yeah. You got to think big. The American Girl store slash massage parlor. Right?
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Right next to the, right across the street from the,
from what?
Well, we're right down the street, maybe, from the abortion clinic inside Holy Name Cathedral. Right?
I mean,
the revenue. You know, we got to start thinking a little bit more creatively about the revenue. And I'm just happy that BLM Brandon and Stacey Davis Gates this week have really reopened and re-energize this conversation in advance of the March 19th primary election so people make the right choice about Bring Chicago Home and so much else that is in the offing. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So on Super Tuesday, the evening of, as the results were pouring in, the gals and Chris Hayes over at MSNBC had a good old time laughing it up over these rubes in places like Virginia who are worried about immigration. Here's Jen Psaki and Rachel Maddow, you know.
So funny.
Well, I mean.
Yucking it up.
It's just.
How could they care about borders? Oh, my God. They're nowhere near the border.
The little people are endlessly entertaining.
I mean, if you look at some of these exit polls, I mean, I live in Virginia. Immigration was the number one issue. Yeah. Again, these could change in Virginia.
Well, Virginia does have a border with West Virginia. Very contested area.
Build a wall. Like, what?
I think Rachel Maddow needs a lozenge. Her voice is getting deeper, or maybe pull back on the testosterone a bit.
I mean, this is all a big joke to them, because Lake and Riley, I mean, she deserved to live, didn't she? But her life was snubbed out by an illegal who came in under Joe Biden, somebody that Joe Biden let into this country.
You're making too much of a thing about it. This is why you have to have cooler heads step in and prevail upon the good senses of the American people, the importance of, as we talked a bit about, with respect to the BLM Brandon agenda, welcoming the newcomers. Joni Ernst in the Senate, she tried to push a floor vote yesterday on a law that would require illegal immigrants who commit violent crimes to be detained by ICE.
Not a big ask.
That doesn't really square with being a welcoming city, county, state like Chicago, Cook, Illinois. So you had to have our very own Sack of Durbin, the senior senator, object to the request and thwart the floor vote on requiring people in this country illegally who commit violent crimes to be detained by ICE. I mean, that's othering. That's not who we are. That doesn't reflect Illinois values. And Dick Durbin was having none of it. And I'm sure since we elected him, we would all agree. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. The legislation that Joni Ernst filed was called the Sarah Root Law, referencing the death of an Iowa woman who was killed by a drunk driver who then fled the country because he wasn't turned over to ICE. Yeah. Over on the House side, they're trying to move the Lake and Riley Act. House Speaker Good. Mike Johnson was on Fox yesterday to talk about that. You know, very similar things now. These legislative measures that are nice to advance because here's something to consider that's in written form. So, you know, is Congress doing anything? Well, some members of Congress are advancing legislation that would involve the federal government in enforcing immigration law and compel them to remove people in this country illegally who commit violent crimes. It's not going anywhere. But, hey, they're conversation pieces at least.
Well, it's so important because we got to ensure that this can't happen again. Republicans will not stand for the release of dangerous criminals into our communities. And that's exactly what the Biden administration has done. Lakin is just one of the tragic examples of innocent American citizens who have lost their lives, been brutally and violently attacked by illegal criminals who are roaming our streets because they've allowed them in. So the Lake and Riley Act, what it will do is ensure that ICE has to arrest and detain criminals who are aliens in the country, and that we'll deport them back to where they came from. And we're also going to allow the states to sue the federal government for its refusal to enforce federal law. We're doing everything we can as House Republicans and Republicans in Congress to enforce upholding the rule of law and sanity, frankly, about this policy. We have got to secure that border. And the president has the authority right now to do it, John, and he won't. And we're going to be highlighting that here all day tomorrow during the State of the Union and all those festivities.
Yeah, well, that's not going anywhere in Chuck Schumer's Senate, of course, and certainly wouldn't go anywhere if it got to Joe Biden's desk.
Well, and then we learned yesterday that the monster who killed Lincoln Riley, the illegal, his brother, because he's been in trouble with the law, too. Yeah, he's a member of that same Venezuelan street gang, the same gang that beat up those NYPD cops in Times Square, the same gang that was stealing everybody's cell phones while they were driving around on mopeds, the Tren de Aragua gang. Yeah. There's pictures of him waving a gun around. Real good people. Yeah, they're bringing their finest. And in Chicago, four illegals who have been here less than 3 months beat up and almost choked to death a 49-year-old Cicero man on the Pink Line. It happened Saturday right before 5 o'clock. And this graphic video, it's not going to come out, but the details were revealed in court yesterday. They lured this man back. One guy grabbed him and started strangling him. He soiled himself and then passed out. And then they grabbed his money from his pocket, his phone, kick him a little bit. and walk away. And they shouldn't have been out in the first place because they've already been arrested a few times for retail theft. Meet your new neighbors. There's a great picture of them on CWB there. Fine-looking gentleman.
Well, they shouldn't have been arrested for retail theft. That's not particularly welcoming. That's not who we are in Chicago and Cook County. So I can understand why that was sort of swept aside, because retail theft is a victimless crime.
Usually
it is moms stealing diapers for their kids, trying to get food to eat just to survive. You know, so there's usually something that is redeeming about it. They're just struggling people who otherwise wouldn't have to resort to stealing if it weren't for our white patriarchal society.
Three of the four were on pretrial release for pending case, and one was so savvy, Dan, that when he would steal from Saks Fifth Avenue, or off Saks Fifth, you know, it's the Nordstrom Rack, he had this blue lined bag so that they wouldn't the motion detectors, you know, the tags on the clothes wouldn't be censored while he was walking out the door.
I'm super impressed. I couldn't care less. Speaking of Virginia, by the way, since they were laughing it up on the MSNBC set, we mentioned there was an illegal immigrant who raped a 14-year-old last week, and he was taken into custody. So I guess that's what has some families a little bit jumpy. And you know, this happens everywhere it's tried. I mean, this is the same thing we see in America's big cities.
Five people die a day from fentanyl in Virginia. But it's funny. I mean, this is fun stuff, huh?
So what we see everywhere in big cities in America, as we've said many times, change out Kim Fox for Larry Krasner, put her in Philadelphia and Larry Krasner here, you'll have the same thing. Change out mayors, Chicago for Philadelphia, for San Francisco, for New Orleans, for Baltimore, for Memphis. You'll have the same thing. Everything would be exactly the same. It's policy. 14-year-old schoolgirl was found dead in an apartment in Vienna. Girl was drugged and raped. Her killer is a 26-year-old Afghan migrant who claimed asylum back in 2015. His first application was rejected by Austrian officials, but courts granted him subsidiary protection on appeal, allowing him to roam freely. His protection from deportation was extended twice following the Taliban takeover in Afghanistan, right, asylum seeker, and never revisited. So he was there illegally, but essentially with sanction of the state, which is the same thing we have in America, for 9 years, and now a 14-year-old girl is dead after she was drugged and raped. Can anywhere you pursue these policies, the result is the same. It does not know geography.
That comment they made and them laughing, they're completely out of touch with Americans. And it reminds me, remember when Cuomo and Don Lemon used to say, well, New York is fine, it's safe. I had a wonderful dinner last night in Manhattan.
Keep laughing it up. Well, and Jen Psaki lives in Virginia, and so everything she sees where she lives is fine. Okay, well, then everything's fine.
Mm-hmm. Just keep sitting up on your high horse there, ladies.
San Francisco residents pressing back a little bit, shockingly. After getting mugged by reality for long enough, literally. Two propositions passed by voters of San Francisco on Tuesday. One gives police more powers to fight crime, pursue suspects, allows drones for catching criminals, face recognition, that sort of thing. The other will require single adults on city welfare to be screened for drug use.
They were all for defunding police. Now they need the police. And the San Francisco Chronicle declared that, Dan, the city can no longer be called progressive. So if they said it, San Francisco's not progressive anymore because of those two measures that passed.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I'm just letting you know. Labeling continues.
These are the consequences of failing to cling to this mindless, destructive ideology, I suppose. But, you know, I guess they're willing to endure the hypocrisy and the slings and arrows of the San Francisco Chronicle to protect themselves a little bit, which seems like a pretty reasoned trade-off. Something else I want to give people an opportunity to participate in. This is sort of like from the same North Shore set. It's not the exact same group, but the same mindset, right? I mean, again, take the North Shore set in Wilmette or Evanston and put them in Highland Park or Glencoe or Hinsdale or Naperville or Downers Grove or Glen Ellen. It's the same thing. It's the same people. You get the same thing. There's an opportunity, and you're not going to want to miss it. Bienvenidos a casa.
I love when you speak Spanish.
An evening in support of our nuevos vecinos. Join us for a traditional Venezuelan dinner from La Cochinita restaurant. And that's not all.
Okay.
There'll be live music, unique raffle prizes, silent auction, as we raise money to support migrant families in easing their transition to our area. The continuation of a highly successful creative community housing solution for newcomer families in Rogers Park, as administered by Nuevos Vecinos Community and Free Store, as well as our continuing efforts to coordinate our response to the crisis on the north side and in the North Shore. It is cocktail attire.
Oh, okay. I'll start planning my outfit now.
It's the North Shore. I mean, Skokie, but it's not really.
Or easier. Our parents grew up there.
I know, but it's not.
Well, I know it's not highbrow. It's
It's too awesome. Middle income. Yeah, I mean, that's the hoi polloi compared to, you know, Wilmette, Winnetka, Glencoe, Highland Park. Sketchbook Brewing Company in Skokie is the host of this event. Also asked to bring new hygiene products, new hygiene products, new underwear, newer used jogger sweatpants, newer used backpacks, strollers, and suitcase, newer used knives and guns. Oh, no, I added that.
That's
not the knives and guns piece.
They're having fundraisers like that all over CPS.
Live music from a teen rock band of newcomer students, as seen on WBEZ, so you know they're hip.
Do they have an agent yet? I'm sure they do.
Bienvenidos a casa. Jim in LaGrange, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Oh, my gosh, what insanity. Speaking of insanity, think about having to make a law to enforce the law.
Right.
Does that just speak to, like, craziness and decline?
Yep.
So is this like being put on double secret probation, Dan? I don't know. Have a great day.
Thanks for the call. Right. Right. We need laws to trigger enforcement of the laws that are supposed to trigger enforcement. Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Joe in Naperville.
Yeah, that MSNBC group reminds me of the smugness of Marie Antoinette, you know, the one that said, let them eat cake. And it really didn't end well for her, did it?
No, it did not. Thanks for the call, Joe.
It's just funny because, you know, President Biden says he needs millions to combat the problem at the border. But those ladies on MSNBC seem to think there is no problem at the border.
Well,
they're not even listening to their boss Biden.
Nothing that can't be solved by Benvenuto's a Casa events in rich suburbs. Help resettle our new neighbors. Joe in Hoffman Estates.
Hey, good morning. Fox News should actually have the O'Reilly family on, play the clip of what they were laughing about at MSNBC, and then get their reaction. I think it would be a death blow to MSNBC, and a lot of people would see what the heck insanity is going on over there.
Well, I'm sure somebody in her circle was watching. I mean, she had 1,000 people at her funeral on Friday, so the chance of one of those people that knows her saw that. Speak up. And shame on those other people on the set who didn't say something at the time. While Jen and Rachel Maddow are laughing.
I saw
the other three bimbos are sitting there. They didn't do a damn thing.
What are they supposed to do? They're in agreement. Yeah. Oh, right. I forgot. They're in agreement. They're sharing a brain. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Representative Mike Collins from Georgia invited, actually, Lake and Riley's parents to the State of the Union address. They declined for obvious reasons.
Yeah, that's I understand.
And but he's going to keep a seat empty. He's sort of making a visual of an empty seat to represent the victims of people who have entered this country illegally.
Good for him.
Yeah. Well, so again, just to repeat, if people didn't have a chance to scrawl this down, that's Saturday, March 30th, 5 to 9 p.m., Sketchbook Brewing Company in Skokie. They've got an Eventbrite page set up. I've got an exciting night to raise money to resettle people who've entered this country illegally. La Cocinita is providing the Venezuelan dinner at the Sketchbook Brewery.
Oh, for free.
You've got basically the 2024 version of Menudo, it sounds like, so that's going to be exciting. Raffle prizes, silent auction items to support migrant families easing their transition to our area. So that's the mentality you're dealing with. That's not going to be a group that would be paying much attention to the effort to pass Sarah's law in the Senate or Lake and Riley's law in the House.
A text message. Do you think the family of Molly Tibbetts in Iowa is laughing about the border crisis?
No, it's not. It's not particularly funny. It's not particularly funny. Don't tell us that, and don't even bother telling the politicians that. But depending on the side, they're locked in. Maybe tell some of your bienvenidos a casa friends where you live that. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka, weekday afternoons at 3 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So, Weed Warrenville High School, Weed Warrenville South, there was a fight in the bathroom that was videoed. This happened last week. You've heard Mike Scott reporting on it this morning. But the video came out after the weekend and after initial punishment was meted out by the school administration. And, of course, because one of the people doing the beating in the bathroom video is black and the person getting beaten is white, we've got a racial component, and so now people are getting stupid.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. I just want you to hear a little bit of the melee and what's happening.
What the f*** you do?
Hitting him in the head, chest. And then two Good Samaritans are dragging him out of the bathroom.
Yeah, I don't know if they're Good Samaritans or not. It doesn't really exactly do it justice.
Well, yeah, and you can see it because we'll tweet it out. It's already been tweeted out. It's on Libs of TikTok, too.
So the kid that was getting the beat down was unconscious, pulled out of the bathroom. Then staff ultimately calls for school nurse and so on and so forth. The mom of the kid who was beaten up say the school is downplaying the fight. Of course, she also speaks to the patch on condition of anonymity. Everybody's anonymous. You know what? I think
this is the time I would not be anonymous.
I think everybody, I don't think people should have names anymore.
Oh, really?
I think everybody should be anonymous just in the interest of making sure there's no retribution to you or anyone you've ever met. I don't think you should put your name on anything.
Okay, we could just be hashtags.
This kid said that she believes the school officials and principal Lori Campos downplaying the incident. This is not just because my son, because this is not isolated. And the way they're trying to push this under the rug is not unique to the situation with my son. Apparently, after you know, word of this got to the administration, they issued suspensions. But
2 days suspension. 2 days of suspension.
Well, it's a little bit more. Two days for the two kids doing the beating that left that kid unconscious, and 10 days for the kid that was beaten unconscious because he apparently invited one or more of those kids to the bathroom after he had been called a name. So they say, oh, well, you initiated the fight, so you're getting more of a suspension than the people that actually beat you up.
Ugh, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. Those two who are beating him up, I don't care if he lured them into the bathroom, they should have been charged right away. This should have been a police matter, and they should have been charged with a crime, which eventually now they are. As
yeah.
Mike Scott was reporting.
And, of course, there's history here, as you might expect, as I understand it from talking to some parents. The kid who is doing the beating, I guess the main kid, has a history of issues. But there's also some confusion about whether the kid who got beaten up has some issues. Here's what I know. The Friday is when the video surfaced. The school starts realizing what really happened in the bathroom. That's when the note to parents goes home about the incident in the bathroom. Then over the weekend, the white kid goes on social media, the kid that was beaten up,
okay. And
makes a threat that he will bring a gun to school to get to the black kid. And the black kid does the same. And people know or believe that the black kid has gang connections because of some incident that happened at a local McDonald's. And so the school gets a hold of all of this. And that's when the police are called and another note goes home. So, yeah, this is sort of, chaos for a minute or two. But it also sort of speaks to, so it's a problem on both sides if you have both of them, you know, on social media threatening to bring guns to school and people to school and settle this and so on. So it speaks to the larger question of what's happening in these schools. I mean, we saw the same thing. This was reminiscent of the incident that happened at York High School where a bunch of kids got around and were picking on and pushing down another kid with Down syndrome. Remember, we had that story exclusively
right.
That went viral. Some anonymous member of a Wheaton area parents group. Everybody should be anonymous. This way you're protected. Then you don't actually have to ever do anything.
No.
You can sheepishly report information that may or may not be true. You can never be called on it. You never have to stand and deliver. And that's obviously what you want to teach your kids, too. Never stand up for yourselves under your own name. Never risk anything. Never stand up and declare what is right and what is wrong. Don't do anything. It's too risky. It's too risky to put your name on anything. There could be repercussions. And the last thing you want to do is teach kids to be responsible for their actions, to have enough sense to think about their reputation in terms of the decisions they make and so on and so forth. You know, the whole idea that the name and the reputation, that's something that's valuable, that's important, that you should protect. No, just get rid of the names and you don't have to worry about that. It takes all that anxiety away. And you wonder why all these institutions are off the rails. I mean, could the parents be any bigger cowards? There's some video circulating, says this anonymous member of the Wheaton area parents group on social media. And then everybody just communicates on social media. Mm-hmm. No, but nobody can be in the same
chat groups. Like, don't you hear this and that?
Yeah, right. They're all
Facebook
the
pages.
Yeah, they're just the busy little bees on social media. Nobody ever comes to the hive and hashes it out face to face. Has a real conversation back and forth. No, they're just sniping on social media like the anonymous Praetorian guard for the school that they are. Some video circulating that has a few other families extremely worried. This is, of course, they're referencing the video. We're told there were five fights the same day. The kids are a reflection of the school, and it has us extremely worried because our kids are going to grow and go to that school. What can be done here? The public schools in our district have gone downhill, and it's very upsetting. This just in. The public schools in our district have gone downhill, and it's very upsetting.
It is upsetting to watch. And this is
happening
at Jones Prep. This is happening at every single school because of these stupid iPhones, and everybody wants their viral moment. They want to be superstars. They want to be influencers because they think that's the easy way out to success in America.
Wait. So people are beating each other up so they can so they can post it on Instagram?
Heck yeah. I see it every day. There's always an incident somewhere.
So
everywhere. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. You go to select.
Okay. So I just want to understand the claim. So the claim is that iPhones are causing violence.
You're damn right it is. And I stand by that 100%.
Of course you do, because it's, it's just.
Well, I know I'm a lot because I don't agree with you because you think my ideas are stupid. I'm on the ground. You guys talk about kids. I'm with kids. And I know exactly what the heck they're doing.
Yeah.
Everybody wants that thing or, come on, fight. And they have their phones up like they're just fixing for a fight. Who's going to get the better angle? Or maybe I'll get hit and then I'll be on here and I can put on Snap. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculousness. So, I don't know what that like. And these COVID kids. Well,
yes, no, but I mean, to continue carrying on, but just a point of order. And I know you dismiss it. I'm aggrieved. You just disagree to disagree. No, I just try to follow logic.
No, I understand that.
And just ask some simple questions.
Yeah. Ask
to plumb the depths of this alleged idea. I would say 99% of the kids at Wheaton Warrenville South, just to use this example, have smartphones. As you can see, that's probably true.
I would say it's 100%. Who doesn't have a phone?
Right. So then what about the overwhelming majority of kids with iPhones who don't get in fights? How do you explain that?
They don't want to get in trouble from their parents or their teachers?
No. Smartphones cause violence. That's what you said. 100%, I stand by it.
People that have smartphones that want to be social influencers cause violence. Just to get that viral moment.
Cause violence. So smartphones and the
it's a tool that they use because they think their life will be easier.
Now it's a tool.
You know what I'm saying.
Uh-huh. Bob in West Chicago, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. I live in District 200, and there's a situation in one of the other schools where a sport coach put his hand on one of the students and kind of reprimanded him, but did nothing more than just touch him. Now he's on administrative leave for months, and because the parents obviously were incensed that this coach touched their child. And I've got family members that know this case personally because they used to work at one of the schools. So it's a problem with the school boards, the teachers' unions, the parents. It goes all the way around.
Thanks for the call, Bob. Well, here's the thing. Obviously this is being hyped because it's out of the ordinary. That's something to consider. The only reason we're talking about this is because it's out of the ordinary and there's video. So we can all be outraged. Oh, this is terrible what happened. Hey, Wheaton Warrenville South. But, I don't know. Did anybody else go to high school or grade school? Were you ever in a fight?
Oh, yeah.
So what are we saying exactly? Is it about kids fighting? I mean, maybe threatening to bring gun to school is taking it next level. I mean, that is.
Everybody
that's a problem. Maybe that would have happened more if there was social media back in our day or earlier. But
we had fights outside the school, though, not inside the school. It was more like, I'll meet you outside in the playground.
But I'll meet you in the bathroom. I'll meet you at the bike rack. Is there a huge difference? It's still on school grounds and so on and so forth. What's the difference? So is it about the nature of kids or is the nature of adults? What's the difference? Are kids all that different? Or are the adults, I'm talking about the parents too, and the administrators, the stakeholders, is that what's different? focused on these kids, and this is what should happen to this one, and so on and so forth. And let's argue about the suspensions. And anonymous mom of kid who got beaten up says this is going on, and they're downplaying this, and so on and so forth. Why is there so much interest in this? Because there's a lot of interest. Remember to think about that? And do you ever think about sort of what you're really reacting to? Ban iPhones. Okay. Tina and Joliet.
Hi, good morning, guys. So I wanted to kind of just touch on why the parent might be afraid to come forward. And after I was on the receiving end of months and months and months of attacks from leftist Antifa groups, tried to get me fired from my job, targeted my children, posted my all personal information, even went so far back as to find some of my high school yearbook pictures. And when I went, I mean, it got so bad that, you know, the FBI was involved in two police departments. And here's the advice I got. Have your company remove your information from their website, delete your social media, change your phone number, and basically just, you know, roll over and go into hiding. That was the help I was offered. And they knew who it was. They knew it because I wasn't the only victim. And there is absolute, they do not want to help you. They don't. I don't know. And I was told because it was happening in Cook County, there's nothing will happen. Even if they went and confronted this person, the main culprit, that it would probably get worse for me and Cook County would do nothing with it. So how could parents are afraid to put their names and faces out there? And I've always been very out front and fighting back against the left. And I understand how grueling it can be, and quite frankly, it can get dangerous. So that may be the reason that they're afraid.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for the call, Tina. I don't know. I'm not really persuaded, I got to tell you. Phil, Northwest Side.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Amy's aware of what she sees, but that's kind of like children. They're aware of whatever new politics of the day. In my father's generation, there were race riots of 100 people and 100 people. In my generation, at Sullivan High School, we'd have 60 to 70 people fighting in the streets all the time, and nothing was on phones. And we had to fight gangbangers almost every single day. And I was considered at a magnet school that was supposed to be, you know, a little better than Steinmetz or Foreman or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with how bad kids are influenced and what the Democrat Chicago Public School teachers usually let people get away with.
And so how were those fights dealt with back in your day at that school?
The police were called. And if a woman officer pulled up, they kept fighting. When the men showed up, they would start dissipating. And I hate to say it, the school basically did nothing. I mean, I had to go in for head x-rays and CAT scans and all kinds of stuff. And we had very political, left-leaning principals and teachers that some were helpful, but most were not. And most were, like, you know, not doing anything about it, not even, like, suspensions or anything. And I think a lot of it what it has to do with is that all this fatherlessness, now you have sissies getting in fights, trying to bully people.
Well,
and the reason I say that is because as long as they can catch a video, it's much more intimidating. And all these kids are growing up with single moms. And 83% of all our prisons, male and female, come from single mom homes. That's the government statistic.
Thanks for the call, Phil. Well, yeah, although that's a much smaller percentage of the families at Wheaton Warrenville South or York High School, and there's still a problem. Well, there's a problem I'm pointing to, not the problem that everybody else is pointing to, this fight between a couple of kids. There's the adult problem I'm pointing to. Steve, Northwest Side.
How you doing? Couple of items. I grew up a single mom house, and if your mom cares about your kids, you take care of them. Do what you're supposed to do. You keep your kids in order. You make sure they're home at night, not roaming the streets at 3 a.m. So the single mom stuff, I'm sick of it. I grew up with a single mom, three kids. She worked. We all were, kept in order what we need to do every day, go to school, do your homework, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So single mom stuff, I'm sick of it. And I went to Gordon Tech, and if you had a problem with one of the guys at the school, they had a boxing ring. Step into the ring after school if you want. Figure it out and move on. Yeah. Nobody was getting arrested. I mean, and if you didn't adhere to the rules there, I mean, I'm sure you remember Gordon Tech. If you had a problem and a priest grabbed you by the shirt to straighten you out, you either took it or they threw you out. No crap. Just move on with life.
Yeah, right. So constructive dispute resolution. Yes.
Oh, it's ridiculous. I'm so the single mom and the single dad and the phones. And you know what? The school should put a rule. No phones in school. If you have a phone in school, they send you home.
Well, that's Northridge Prep. Yep. Joe, Arlington Heights.
Good morning. Obviously, with all the comments we're hearing, this is a complicated subject that has to do with parenting. It has to do with media. You know, but I just recall from time to time reading or hearing interviews about studies that were done about the vast decrease in empathy that is theorized to be occurring by social media interaction instead of in-person interaction. And so I think, Amy, when you're referring to the cell phones, I would say it's much deeper than that. It's a corrosive effect on society and behavior based upon individuals not dealing face-to-face, settling it in the boxing ring, if you will, at Gordon Tech, and you know, growing up that way. And then eventually you just have less care for another. I saw an article in Psychology Today saying that over the course of 20 years, trying to measure empathy on college campuses, they're showing a 40% decline in care for the other.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Joe. I mean, I don't know, Psychology Today, not exactly a reliable source anymore, but yeah, I hear what you're saying. Frank, Board of Trade, quickly.
My wife went to Ridge South 50 years ago when they used to bus the kids in. She told me that there was girls in the ladies' room picking fights every day.
Thanks for the call. Right, so sort of my point. The kids haven't changed that much. The institutions and the approach by the adults, that's what's changed.
All right. I agree with that. Fine.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560 The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So President Biden's State of the Union address is tonight. It'll be, by the way, aired live here starting at 8 p.m.
Yes, that's right. And we'll be taking your phone calls all day tomorrow morning. Well, not all day, but tomorrow to see if you watched it and what you learned or didn't learn from it.
Well, he's going to have to address the matter at the border. He's going to address it in a meaningful way. He'll, of course, make the call for these intransigent House Republicans to support this bipartisan legislation that was crafted by Schumer and McConnell/Lankford. And can't we just work together? I'll come to you. You come to me. Let's do this for America and so on and so forth. But against that backdrop, he's going to have a problem, which I assume will be included in the Republican response and the back and forth subsequent to the speech, which is the efforts that have been made by House Republicans, not just H.R. 2, but as House Speaker Mike Johnson outlined yesterday, the Lake and Riley Act that is being advanced in the House. And what other than the overture for bipartisanship, which is sort of a conceding the underlying advance of people coming into this country illegally, just at a slower pace, what else is he going to have to say? Will he do something that maybe is unanticipated and would be upsetting to his base, which is to announce executive orders along the lines of what is contained in the Lake and Riley Act?
Well, it's so important because we got to ensure that this can't happen again. Republicans will not stand for the release of dangerous criminals into our communities, and that's exactly what the Biden administration has done. Lakin is just one of the tragic examples of innocent American citizens who have lost their lives, been brutally and violently attacked by illegal criminals who are roaming our streets because they've allowed them in. So the Lake and Riley Act, what it will do is ensure that ICE has to arrest and detain criminals who are aliens in the country, and that we'll deport them back to where they came from. And we're also going to allow the states to sue the federal government for its refusal to enforce federal law. We're doing everything we can as House Republicans.
Well, if the action in the Senate is any indication, probably don't expect to hear anything particularly new from President Biden, considering Dick Durbin, one of Pagliacci's sentinels in the Senate, killed an opportunity to have a floor vote on the Sarah Root Law, sponsored by Iowa Senator Joni Ernst, which would do something very similar to what the Lake and Riley Act would do, that is pending in the House. For more on all this, we're pleased to be joined by Nicole McCaw. She is the producer and creator of the documentary Border Wars, which is available at salemnow.com, salemnow.com, the film Border Wars. Nicole, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Thank you so much for having me on.
So give us sort of your angle of incidence on all things border security and immigration related as presented in your film.
When we went to the border 2 years ago, we wanted to see, are there kids in cages? Are there women and children being brought into sex trafficking? Is there fentanyl at the border? And right as we started our journey, I'm from inner city Detroit. My nephew actually overdosed 3 times on fentanyl within 48 hours. Sorry. And what's unique about this fentanyl is that 40% of it coming across the border is actually lethal. We are losing 400 Americans a day to a one-time use of fentanyl. The ages between 18 and 23. That is our future, my friend. That's our future. And that's what we're facing here at the border. Now, a lot of the times we see these activists where they're saying climate change, let's take care of the environment, stop the petroleum. They're, you know, throwing paint on priceless art. Yet they're not at the border looking at the women and children, 50 to 80% who are getting raped coming in. That's the truth we are facing. We are facing murders in our community by these illegals. Look what happened in the state of Georgia to that university student. I mean, there's so many examples that we can see with the open border and the people in power. Every single one of them, with just their signature, can veto and close this border. They can veto anything that comes across their desk that doesn't have to do with closing the border, and they're choosing not to.
And so in your film, though, the focus on this seems to be on the human cost, maybe on both sides of the border. And because I understand that you interview victims of this trafficking and lawlessness at the border.
Absolutely. So we feature some victims in our film. They were brave enough to come forward and share their story as a part of their healing journey. And what I wanted to feature is this girl was from Action Park, New Jersey. She was held in a basement in Long Island for 3 years. And here's the kicker. She met her handler online, and she was groomed online by someone that was out of the country, who came into the country illegally, ended up meeting up with her and then taking her and selling her 30, 40 times a night to construction workers out of the basement in Long Island.
Did she ever, I mean, how did she get rescued?
Her story is in there. And in the end, she ended up in Arizona on a campus following a girl who had a golden retriever from a 7-Eleven and followed her back to the campus. She saw a professor and just let it all out because she was only 17 years old.
Wow.
And she told the campus professor. They ended up helping her, getting her rescued. And then right now she's in law school, becoming an attorney in the state of New York.
That's a great story. So this two-year journey, where did you go? Because you must have been in some dangerous places.
We went from places like Tijuana, California. We went all the way over to the famous place for Eagles Pass, Hidalgo, Roma. We went to Villaverde. We went to McAllen, the kidnapping capital of the country. Did you guys know that?
I did not know that. So what's going on in McAllen, Texas?
Right now, they have the highest cases of missing persons in the country on record for the past decade from kidnapping.
And you mentioned, too, that 2 years ago you wanted to see the ballyhooed kids in cages and so forth. So your interaction with Customs and Border Protection and what the situation was for the migrants and how they were treated by American law enforcement, is that part of it as well?
It was. And actually, when we were speaking to the NGOs, it was interesting when we were filming, they were all happy to show us and everything was all right and we brought toys and food. But as soon as we stopped rolling, a lot of the employees, the volunteers, came up to us and they were talking with us and showing us how the children were marked on their teeth before they even come into the country. Mm. So that way they're belonging to certain cartels. Not only do they have their wristbands to identify them, but now they're marking their teeth. And one night, we detained 100 illegals, 48 were men, the rest were children, zip-tied and sedated on Zoloft. And when we called 911 and the ambulance came, they said, yeah, you guys, they're probably on Zoloft. Look around and you'll find the packets. Well, we found a bunch of Zoloft packets. Now, I'm a mother of a 13-year-old child. Yes, being a parent is aggravating sometimes, but I never drugged him. So clearly, these were not their fathers. And when we asked them, where's the mother? We're getting a divorce. All 48 men at the border at 3:32 a.m.?
So their parents, they're just unaccompanied minors that were kidnapped or sold to these men to take into the country? Because I guess you're treated differently if you're here illegally with a child rather than by yourself.
Absolutely. So what I found going to the border and actually walking on the other side and talking to families, a lot of the families, women actually, with no husbands and the children were taken. They said a lot of the times what happens is the cartels come, they recruit the husbands, they leave, they come into the United States, and the cartels come back for their kids. And not so they can be joined as a family, so they can work for the gangs or sold into sex trafficking. And here's the reality that we face. $22 million a day is what Texas is making in child sex trafficking. Just one state alone. This is a day.
What do you mean Texas is making?
So what I mean by that, the cartels in the state of Texas are
making $22 million
dollars a day off of sex trafficking. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah. So I'm right. I mean, it's such a ghoulish business. People don't even want to confront it, I suspect. They don't want to think about these horrific things. But this is what Tom Homan, the former acting ICE director under Trump, says all the time, that border security is the most humane policy because this is the lawlessness just animates these ghoulish businesses, the fentanyl business, the drug trafficking that you're talking about, and the human trafficking, including minors. I mean, so all of these sort of Horatio Alger stories that are pumped by the open borders crowd. This is the seedy underbelly that they don't want to discuss, that they don't want to talk about, that they don't want to see documented, because this is the reality.
Absolutely. And what I found interesting about the history with the border wall, right? You know, we were told, oh, there's a big wall, people are getting hurt, they can't come in. Well, when I went there, majority of it is rusting. And it's open. I mean, we went to 2,000 miles, and it's just open like a Walmart parking lot. There's nothing there. And then we went to the pieces of the wall, and there's sections. And you'll see in the film that we have an open section. And this bus from Mexico drives through and stops in the middle of nowhere. And like 80 people get off the bus. And then the bus just drives back to Mexico. No problem. Just drop off the load.
That's just another stop, right? It's just a bus stop. That's the border is a bus stop.
they fly them in secretly or put them on a bus and just drive.
Yeah, right.
And you know, something else that we investigated. This is something interesting. You know, we were told, oh, we're not flying them in the middle of the night. We're not flying them. No way. Well, one of the gentlemen, Baz, who's a former CIA operative, former Marines, military, special forces, he ran out in Tennessee and for us and got the footage, which is in the film, And Spirit Airlines and American Airlines are flying these illegals. And then when you speak to the drivers, when they pull up in the Lyft and the Ubers to take these individuals off of the airplane, they ask them, do you know where you're taking them? Have you vetted these families? No, we just got an address and I got a paycheck, $1,500 to drive them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, well, now we know, thanks to the Center for Immigration Services, FOIA lawsuit, 320,000 migrants have been flown in to 43 airports financed by our government. They won't tell us anymore. We see James O'Keefe at this Ramada Inn Hotel in San Diego that's behind, that's fenced off. There's a black tarp on the fence so that you can't see and you can't see what's going on. I mean, all these things that are done surreptitiously, too, the involvement of the NGOs like Catholic Charities, these things that are done surreptitiously. I mean, if this is so humane, if this is so positive, if this is so laudable, this approach to border security and immigration policy, then you would think people would want to do it in the light of day, would be happy to do it in the most transparent fashion possible. It doesn't it generate appropriate skepticism when everything is done in such an opaque fashion?
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. We are World War champions back to back. Why are we allowing these crimes against humanity to happen to women, to children, to their families? This is something that blows my mind. Right now, the Center of Immigration, Todd Benson, he's featured in the film. He's a 20-year agent, special border analysis, as well as he's worked under a couple different presidents for immigration policies. And what's interesting is he told me when he was in Juarez, he walked up to a guy who has a tent mansion. He's a foot smuggler. And he asked him, what contributes to your success? And he said, invitation in Spanish. So when they finished the interview, he said it was Joe Biden when he went on the stage and debated Trump and said, who wants open borders? And Joe Biden raised his hand. He said, that's an invitation to all of us foot smugglers. You will be rich. Well,
yeah, right. Decriminalizing border crossings, which every Democrat candidate for president, except for Colorado Senator Michael Bennett, raised their hand and said, I'm for decriminalization of border crossings. That message gets out the world over, of course. I mean, that was such a moment, and it's so underappreciated. I'm glad you mentioned that. Nicole McCaw is the producer and creator of the documentary Border Wars. Again, it's called Border Wars, and it's available at salemnow.com. Nicole, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Dan and Amy. Take care.
Thank you. God bless. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I always have respect for people who do like a complete 180 professionally when they're, you know, mid or even later on in their particular career, right? I mean, that takes a lot to do something completely different after you've been doing it for a while, right?
Got to reinvent yourself.
Yeah.
It's not easy, but people do it.
Well, with God, all things are possible, including an Atlanta police officer becoming the founder of a Christian school for troubled youth in West Virginia. That's the story of Stephen Finn. It's a remarkable one that I first learned about by reading a profile on him in Epoch Times. He joins us now to talk about this directional shift mid-career. Stephen Finn is the founder and executive director of the Chestnut Mountain Ranch School in West Virginia. Thanks for joining us, Steve. Appreciate it.
It's good to be here, Dan and Amy. Thank you for having me.
So tell us, how does an Atlanta cop start a Christian school in West Virginia?
Yeah, it was something I never expected. I had 12 years of law enforcement in Metro Atlanta, absolutely loved what I did. It was a calling on my life. I thought I was going to be an officer for the rest of my days. And, you know, God throws you a curveball sometimes. And fortunately enough, my wife and I were paying attention when that came. And And we started, you know, just these what-if conversations. We saw a lot of kids entering the system. We saw a lot of kids making poor decisions that were cutting their life short. And it was stirring conversation with my wife and I, like, what if we did more? What if we could get upstream from this and help these children? And we didn't even know what we were talking about at the time. But you don't know until you start knocking. And so we started checking things out, and we found a Christian children's home in Georgia. We fell in love with it. We decided to go jump in. We became a house parent for 3 years at this facility called Eagle Ranch, and that's where the vision began to get traction for West Virginia. Once we saw a program that worked, once we saw a program that was not only turning the lives of these children around, but was restoring families, And I was, conversely, I was seeing it as an officer. I was seeing these programs, these kids being adjudicated for 4 to 6 months, and they were basically just being warehoused, and nothing was taking place in their heart or their home. And here's this private Christian program just north of Atlanta that was knocking it out of the park. And the what-if conversation started again about what if we took this somewhere in the country where the need is the highest. And my wife, you know, she's crazier than I am, and she said, let's do it. And so we did the research, and West Virginia came up as having the highest statistics for children in foster care and other areas of at-risk situations. And so we decided to go after it in 2005.
Wow. How did COVID play into this? Because a lot of kids were, you know, at home on their laptops.
Well, we've got a degree of children out of school and truancy issues, and obviously the opioid epidemic here in West Virginia is the worst in the country, and so you've got all these adults that are going into the system or passing away, and you've got all these kids that are being raised by grandparents or the going into the foster care, and so the system's overloaded anyway, and then COVID hits, and you've got accelerated degree of isolation. So these kids are just getting so far behind in school. And of course our phones started ringing on the backside of COVID with just families that were crying out for help. They just didn't know how to get their child out of a rut back into a degree of normalcy, and these kids were shutting down.
Well, wait a second. We skipped over some things here. So we're in Georgia. We're being a house family, and we're seeing a model that works. And then we decide we're going to go to West Virginia to replicate it or scale what we saw in Georgia. Well, so I take it from the article, you guys didn't have a lot of venture capital lying around. So, you know, how do you do that? I mean, how do you go from Georgia to West Virginia and open a school and operate the school and so on and so forth? I mean, that's there's still a lot missing in how that comes to be.
Oh, there's a lot missing there. Yeah. So, and I'll try to go through it quickly. The
take your time.
You know, it comes down to prayer and petition, and we decided, hey, if God's in this thing, He's in it. If He's not, He's not. And so I don't have a fundraising background. I don't have a public speaking background. I was an officer that had a heart for kids, and we jumped in. And so we decided, okay, we're moving to the poor state with this huge vision. How are we going to do this? And we decided, let's do this debt-free. Let's not ask for money. If God's in this, we're going to pray it in. And if it's not, in 12 months, we're going to shut it down. But I knew I needed to be here. So we moved here. We packed up the U-Haul and the kids. We bought a little house in West Virginia, and we just got here. And so that first year was rough. I thought I had made a big mistake. We got down to $25 in our bank account at one point. We were $25.54 away from tapping out and moving back to Georgia. And that was my deal with God. I said, hey, if this thing goes on the other side of the finances, we're done. And he just stripped us down to nothing. And in our last hour, when we're getting ready to pull out, because we couldn't find anybody that was willing to sell us land without going to a bank, and this whole vision seemed like it was collapsing. And in the final hour, I get the phone call. And there's this property. The gentleman wants to meet. He gives us a price. And what I didn't realize was that there was people watching us. A lot of people. You know, I had about 88 people on my mailing list when this thing started. It was basically my mom's Christmas card list. it was Uncle Doyle and just people that we knew. But what we didn't realize was there was a lot of people that heard about us, that found out, and people were just peeking over the fence to see what was going to happen. And when this property got in our crosshairs, this miracle unfolded, and we went from 0 to 90, and we bought the property debt-free in about 9 weeks. So we went from moving back to Georgia to being on the map, and this thing started rolling out.
And then getting the word out and getting enough trust of families that are looking for a schooling alternative for their kids that they put their trust in you guys with their kids, with their boys.
That's right. So we've got 300 acres. We've got when we bought the land, there wasn't even a trail into the property. We had to develop everything, and people started showing up. Corporations, Coca-Cola came in heavy. We've had churches from Atlanta, churches from West Virginia, all over the East Coast. The story got out, and people started coming and helping us hack into this land and build roads. And then the buildings, if you go on our website, you'll see how beautiful our facility is. But it's been by the hand of many. Wow. Right now, we've got 21 college kids here from Boston that are here on their spring break. They decided to come here and help us build the fourth boys' home. We've got four homes on the property right now. We have a vision to build three more. We're doing this debt-free. We've got a beautiful school on the property that's big enough for 60 children, and that we can grow into it as we add more homes. Our school is nationally accredited, and we've got a chapel on the property that went up 2 years ago, and we hope to break ground on a gymnasium later this year.
This is like Field of Dreams stuff. Like I'm waiting for you to tell me that Joe Jackson showed up.
What's one of your success stories for your kids? I know you take in troubled teens, but have any of them, like, just tell us about one of your success stories.
Well, so our very first boy, you know, when you open a facility, you're going to take any kid that shows up at first, right. And so we had some pretty rough kids in the early days. But I can remember our very first boy that came through here. He had a lot going against him. Family issues. He had some physical disabilities. And I just thought, man, what's this kid going to do when he gets older? He was just always it just seemed like he always had everything going against him. And he was a handful. And at about 16 years old, something happened. He was with us for almost 5 years. He ended up growing up here, and he began to mature. His speech cleared up because he had a speech impediment. He had some issues with his arms. They straightened out. He just became this man, mm-hmm. And now he is a police officer here in West Virginia. He's actually the chief of police in a small town. And he comes by all the time in uniform with his patrol car, and it puts me in the humble seat every time I see him roll onto the property, because I'm like, okay, God just fed me a big piece of humble pie, because in the early days I thought, man, I'm not sure what this kid's going to do. We've got a lot more stories like that. We've got kids in the military. We've got kids. We've got one young man with the FBI. A lot of our kids have gone into trade schools. They've gotten into there's just a lot of work out there, and these kids can jump into welding or plumbing, heavy machinery operating, and be making a good living right out of, 18, 19 years old. You know, statistically, the population of kids that we're dealing with, these kids would not be graduating high school. If they weren't at the ranch, they wouldn't be here. They wouldn't be graduating high school, and they'd be in the judicial system at some level. We've had over 100 kids go through our program since we opened, since we took the first kid in 2011, and 91% of the children that have gone through our school have graduated high school and have moved on to higher, whether it's trade school or higher education.
It's interesting too, because so you come from Atlanta and working for Atlanta PD, so you're in this urban environment. Now you're in this rural environment. And I just kids of largely different races, white versus black, West Virginia versus Metro Atlanta.
Right.
But it's the same problems, right? It's the same challenges.
You know, it boils down to these children want to be seen. They want to be heard. They need a father and a mother. We hear all this talk today about homelessness and dealing with the mental health issues and incarceration rates. But if you go upstream from that, it goes into the foster care system. Like, so many of these people that we need to help have been in the foster care system, or they've been in a fatherless or parentless situation where somebody other than their parents have raised them. And that's a tough situation for a child to deal with. And so as they age out, they're gravitating towards people groups that, or decisions that are unhealthy and putting them in bad places. So we're trying to get upstream from even that, mm-hmm. and deal with the, you know, what's causing these issues, and how can we get the community behind this to step in? How can we get the church behind this to step in and work with government officials to support those in foster care, work with those children in foster care, build more facilities like Chestnut Mountain Ranch, where these children have a safe haven to grow up and be part of a loving home for a season of their life where they're experiencing unconditional love, they're experiencing structure, they're experiencing a work ethic, and they're realizing that, you know, there's a God in heaven that knows them by name, and that he's got a plan and a purpose for their life.
You know, I tell you, it's really interesting too, because it, you know, it's how leadership builds consensus, or maybe uncovers consensus. So, you know, you go there, and it's a, you know, smaller town setting. I imagine, I'm not well versed in West Virginia, but and people hear about, wait, what are they doing? What? And then they're watching you guys, as you say, as you later found out. So everybody knew there was a problem. Everybody knew what the problem was. And then you come in with an idea, and then the community rallies around the idea, and then you get, you know, help from far and wide and from Atlanta Falcons that you didn't expect, and so on and so forth. I mean, it's just such a fascinating example of, you know, a vision, basically.
I mean, yeah, it took some time to get kind of accepted into this Appalachian culture.
I'm sure. And to put everything on the line, too, to pursue this vision that's in service of others and, of course, in service of the Maker. But, I mean, just outstanding. So pleased to speak with you and wish you great congratulations on your success and continued good work. Stephen Finn is the founder and executive director of Chestnut Mountain Ranch in West Virginia. Steve Finn, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Dan and Amy, thank you so much. It's an honor.
Thank you. God bless you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Edmond, Oklahoma, a great place to grow. That's the city's motto. And apparently it's a great place to lick chocolate out of the armpit of your classmates and random adults.
Wait, I thought it was peanut butter off their feet. Now they're chocolate in the armpits?
Their Libs of TikTok brought us the story that we talked about earlier in this week. Fundraising at Deer Creek High School in Edmond, Oklahoma, which involves the students sucking on the toes and licking the feet of fellow students and I think some adults. So these are freshmen to seniors. So, you know, 14 years old. And yeah, it was allegedly they were licking peanut butter off of the toes or something like this. But it turns out more videos have surfaced. And it's not just Deer Creek High School. It's all the schools in the government school system in Edmond. Edmond Memorial, Edmond North. And they've been doing it for years. Shouldn't be surprising. They didn't get caught the first time. Or these videos didn't surface the first time they did this. And the other videos have kids licking peanut butter off the feet of I don't know. I can't tell if there are other students because the faces are blotted out. If there are other students or adults. And double teaming, you know, one kid per foot. And then also licking chocolate out of the armpits of the same people.
Okay, and now I'm going to get sick. That is so disgusting. Oh, God.
But hey, wait a second.
It's for
a good cause.
We raised $152,000 for the children.
It's for a good cause. You know, look, I'll do anything for a good cause, including tap my 14-year-old to lick chocolate out of the armpit of some dude. Right? For a good cause. Ryan Walters is the state school superintendent for the state of Oklahoma. He's been addressing this on social media, but he went to Fox News to address it there, too.
So the story, I mean, it's disgusting. It's outrageous. This is a breach of trust for parents with a school district. So first of all, this should never happen. In Oklahoma, this isn't our values. We're not going to stand for it. So we immediately have launched an investigation. And to your point, yeah, you know, that's what the district's saying. Well, the district allowed this to happen. So we will be investigating it. We will be finding out where, you know, were adults involved, were administrative staff involved, who okayed this. And frankly, this is why parents' rights are so important. You know, you've heard Joe Biden fight against parents, fight against transparency and accountability. You've heard President Trump champion bringing parents' rights back to the classroom, back to the schools. This is why we should be investigating districts, not targeting parents the way Joe Biden has. We are going to get to the bottom of this here in Oklahoma. This is unacceptable. We will not allow this in the state of Oklahoma. First of all, we want clarity from the district of what actually happened here. Who okayed this? What adult said this is okay? Secondly, when did you tell parents? We've been told by multiple parents we didn't know anything about this beforehand, and we weren't told immediately afterwards either. So where is the accountability from the district? Well, there will be accountability from us, both of what process was in place, what were parents told when, and what kind of process or procedure do you have? You're supposed to be the adults. These are children. Mm-hmm. The adults should have been looked after, the children and their care, mm-hmm. not breaking the trust of parents. So those are all things we will get to the bottom of this very quickly here.
Dad, can you sign this consent form so I can suck peanut butter off the toes of some dude?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You could also reach us on our text line, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. I mean, because parents, like, we sign stuff
videos.
And we never know what we're signing stuff for, but maybe parents should know what their kids are doing. But I have, is there video of the under armpit licking?
Yes.
Oh, God, Dan, is it just gross? Because the other one of them sucking the toes.
No, it's very appetizing. It's making me hungry. Is it gross?
Does the tongue get wrapped around the armpit hair? But the one of them licking the peanut butter off the feet is looking so
sexual. Can I put
some
whipped cream on this?
Well, it's so sexual in nature. It looks like they're sex slaves.
It is.
It's grotesque. It's just, who in the world would think this is a good idea? No one exercises common sense anymore.
And I'm sorry, if this was going on at all the schools for years, this is what Libs of TikTok is suggesting based on these other videos that have been unearthed, then, I mean, some people had to know. I mean, you see in the videos, the more recent videos with the chocolate and the armpits and the peanut butter and the, you see the backdrop where it's in a gymnasium. Where you have people in the bleachers.
Right. If they're not participating in it, they're watching it. And they don't think that something's wrong?
Yeah. Did something get into the water system in Edmond, Oklahoma? Or, it's really difficult to process, frankly. I mean,
you're going to make me look. Did you blog it, by the way?
It's there. Link's there. I mean, you know, obviously men gyrating in front of grade schoolers in scantily clad men gyrating in front of toddlers before reading them a story. You know, that's normal. But this. I mean, I don't know. I think I'm so desensitized by what's happening in the government school systems and some of the private schools, too, that I don't know. It's sort of like what Leon Wolf's book review of Meghan McCain's book. Mm-hmm. I am not a good enough writer to come up with the words to appropriately describe how bad this is. So that I'm sort of in the same thing. I can't. I'm you know, got a fairly good vocabulary. I'm struggling
You're
for
struggling.
The words to properly describe this and what it implicates.
Oh boy! Oh,
did
no,
you see
no.
it?
Oh, okay.
Did you see
oh,
it?
Okay. Okay.
You thinking about maybe for the girls' volleyball team this year, raise a little cash?
Little team bonding, yeah. No, yeah, no, I'm gonna pass.
This hasn't come to Amundsen yet?
No, it never would. No one would do this or let this be done to them or allow that to happen. No.
John in Milwaukee.
Oh boy.
Good morning. They talk of the priests and abuse, and the teachers by far are worse. I am a Catholic, and I am so grateful for the nuns and the rulers. Thank you so much.
Thanks, John. Yeah. Yeah, I have to agree with you. I got where to for a couple of times, too, in grade school and high school. Probably a good thing.
This is like an assault.
Deborah in Arlington Heights.
Good morning. Welcome to Dystopia. What happened to social distancing? And these are the same people that said you needed to stay home for 2 years or more because you can't be near anybody. Make it make sense to me, because it doesn't.
Well, you get your jab, and then you start licking the chocolate out of the armpits.
Maybe they had to be tested for COVID first, you know, before they were able to lick away. And then they're, like, even humping with their bodies. This is disgusting.
Text for 847, perhaps a way to help finance the new Bears Sox stadium. McCaskey, Reinsdorf families lick toes and armpits for money. Maybe.
Flicking her hair back. I mean, this is like a porno. I feel like I'm watching porn. All right?
And,
I'm just going to say it.
And kiddie porn, because they're, you know, minors.
Ew.
But, hey, you know, it's for...
For the children. Everything's for the children.
I can't emphasize it enough. It's not for the children. It's for a good cause.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's for a good cause. I mean, they raise, and this is what the school district initially said, right? We talked about this the other day when this first surfaced. So, but we raise $150,000 for this local coffee shop that employs people with special needs. Well, it's wonderful that that coffee shop exists, and it's wonderful. It sounds like wonderful what they do. That doesn't exactly justify this approach to raising money for that cause, though, does it now? But that's something else the adults in charge couldn't work through. They couldn't work through the logic of that or the lack of logic.
Groomers is what somebody texted in. That's what these teachers are.
Mike in Tinley Park.
Yes, Dan. We ought to get the names of the school superintendents that allow this to happen. Put an all-out effort, because these people are perverts, and we should let them know that this is going on. A lot of people still are asleep. I'm a grandparent, and I know what's going on with my grandchildren. Some of these parents just don't understand what the end game is with these people. And I'm a Catholic, and those nuns, they taught us the right way. They had discipline. Now, where are we going after the CPS school system with all their violations and assaults? You don't hear anything about that.
No, you don't.
Right.
You don't.
Right.
You guys don't even.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Right. Exactly. Rick, Downers Grove.
Hey, good morning. The problem is the parents nowadays. I mean, you got the parents of these kids. Mumsy's got pink hair and is concerned about being nice to Hamas. And daddy's busy transitioning into an acorn. They don't have time to worry about what's going on with their kids.
All right, Rick. I think all those kids need to be shipped to Chestnut Mountain Ranch in West Virginia. I'll let our friend Steve have a go at properly educating them.
Whatever happened to concerts and bake sales for fundraisers or selling the chocolate bars?
Boring.
What?
Boring. Come on.
You got to entertain the crowd. Everyone's got to get involved, yeah. Cheer you on while you do something sexual in nature to someone else, okay?
I'm still...
Yeah, you can't... And you are never...
I mean...
Ever won it with a loss of words. You can't even talk about this.
I don't think Gore Vidal could conceive of this scene. Okay?
Okay.
Kevin in Austin, Texas.
It's just another indication of the garbage society or garbage culture that we live in. And it's also a manifestation of government thinking. Let's prostitute children so we can save the children. I mean, it's absolutely insane.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Thanks. That's right.
No. Yeah, we're going to prostitute the children, but hey, we're going to employ people with special needs. And again, it has nothing to do with the cause. It just has to do with the reasoning. What are you all of the adults that knew about this? And I don't even know how this got out. Finally, this video made its way to somebody that has some decency, and it made its way to libs of TikTok, and now it's made its way to national attention. Thank goodness. But I mean, I agree with, was it Mike that said to put their names out? Well, ultimately, Ryan Walters, the state school superintendent, he better prove up, and we should know the names. And then I hope they also bring everybody else in, treat it like a crime family, you know, have everybody turn on everybody to expose everybody who knew about this and somehow thought this was kosher. I mean, it's just... It's stunning. I mean, if you haven't seen it, you will be repulsed in a way that is, I think, difficult to again describe.
And just that's shocked. Like watching it, you might feel violated, and you're not even there, but it's like it puts you in the room.
High school kids in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
Right.
Republican Oklahoma.
So it's, you know, there's no place to run and hide. So you may want to stand and fight where you are. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
All right, we need to take a shower.
Well, we need to cleanse the palate after that segment, and I've got the great way to do it. You know, once upon a time, yeah. I was an American Idol correspondent. I was the pundit funded for the Don Wade Roma show.
I know. It was such a bizarre role for you, but actually, you nailed it. You got a perfect 10, my young friend.
Well, I'm a big fan. I've sort of fallen off American Idol, but there's this... this young woman whose performance was making the rounds, and I wanted to share it. I mean, it's not quite Oliver Anthony quality in terms of the discovery, but it's similar to that, both in terms of the message as well as the talent. This is a high school senior from Starkville, Mississippi, named Jennifer Jeffries. She is one of 9 kids, and it's an original song, a la Richmond, North of Richmond. It's not political. But it is something that would run afoul of, you know, the American Idol culture, if you will. Her original song is called Change My Ways.
So beautiful.
Here's Jennifer Jeffries from Starkville, Mississippi.
I've got a Bible on my desk with no highlights or creases, all pages are still crisp. I had this idea, Miss Independent, oh, that's who I am, just watch me excel. Well, I'm falling fast, too fast to catch myself. Independent, didn't age too well. Well, I've been feeding the flesh, I've been living in sin. My mouth's been running wild, and I've been acting like a wild child. So I say this prayer, God, I know you're there. I ain't been playing fair, and I've been only praying
And she's the youngest of nine kids, and she got a golden ticket to go to Hollywood, though.
How good is that?
I know. She's
how good is that? She's like a cross between Bonnie Raitt and Kim Carnes. Mm-hmm. But the lyrics, too. I mean, that is unbelievable talent.
The whole package. She's a real
Remember talent. The name Jennifer Jeffries, Starkville, Mississippi. I hope you're going to be hearing a lot more about her.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The fight to kill DIE, diversity, inclusion, equity, on college campuses and K-12 school systems and corporate America everywhere. It's uneven in terms of the progress that's being made against this pernicious form of identity politics that's masqueraded as some sort of hefty intellectual theory. It's not. Just counting by race and other identity characteristics. It's not particularly robust. University of Florida recently minted university president there, Ben Sass, former senator from Nebraska. They got rid of the DIE infrastructure altogether. They're just zeroing it out.
Just done with it.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. That's a start.
North Carolina just announced the new dean of their new school, the School on Civic Life, and he is a classicist and philosopher by training. That seems like there was enough interest from trustees and donors to maintain some interest in Western civilization at University of North Carolina, so that's good news. The DIE director at Johns Hopkins University's medical school, who we talked about a few weeks back when her privilege hit list surfaced, her name is Dr. Sherita Hill Golden, and she's a medical doctor. She put out a privilege hit list, including, I think, you know, targeting people, targeting individuals like white people because of their inherent privileges. Well, she's decided to step down, no doubt under pressure. Houghton University in New England, the president there, Wayne Lewis, it's a Christian university, small Christian university, but at least he's making a public statement because a lot of Christian universities are not, and school systems and academic heads are not. The president there, Wayne Lewis, is saying, boys are not playing girls' sports here. We're not doing that. That's a stronger statement than the NCAA is willing to make, for example. But on the flip side, don't get too excited. University of Virginia, they spend $20 million annually on their DIE staff. The senior associate dean and global chief diversity officer.
Fit that on a business card, huh?
No, well, you can afford to because his base pay is $451,000. When you burden it with the benefits, it's almost $600,000. And then the guy below him is at $400,000, and the girl below him is at $312,000, and the guy below her is at $224,000, and on down the line, all the way down to paltry $166,000.
Oh, that poor peasant at the bottom.
That's a lot
of
people and a lot of money to count by race. So, you know,
wrong
just
business, man.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. The business for the race hustlers and the identitarians is still fairly robust. Don't kid yourself. We, as I've said many times, we let things go so far off the rails, it's going to take a while, and it will be painstaking to get them back on the rails everywhere. Some are more approaching this with more alacrity than others, say in Gainesville, as compared to, I don't know, Champaign. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by our friend Mark Perry. Mark Perry is a professor emeritus, University of Michigan, in economics and finance. He's also the Carpe Diem blogger for the American Enterprise Institute. And he's also a one-man gang when it comes to exposing and filing complaints against K-12 school districts, as well as universities that are taxpayer-funded and in violation of federal anti-discrimination laws. So let's get a little bit of update about what he's been up to. Mark Perry, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Yeah, hi, Dan. Hi, Amy. Glad to be on again.
Before we get to your work, I mean, just sort of your, I mean, you're still, you know, you spent a long time in academia. You know the landscape. I mean, you're still very engaged in what's happening on college campuses per this anti-discrimination hawking that you do. And so what's your handle on where DAI stands? I remember in your blog you used to document how big the and how expensive the DAI staff was at University of Michigan often. So, you know, what's your handle on where identity politics is going after the Supreme Court's decision, the Harvard admissions case, and then these examples and counterexamples we see popping up around?
Yeah, well, there's a couple strongholds. You mentioned University of Virginia and all of their highly paid diversocrats. I do an annual study on the University of Michigan, which I said is becoming a, you know, a diversity empire that runs a university on the side. They have 241 full-time paid staffers that focus on diversity at a cost of more than $30 million. And then when you factor in some unfilled positions and some positions that are being advertised and different committees, you know, I can estimate that the number of people focused on DEI or DIE, as we like to say at University of Michigan, is about 700 staff members. And they have these five-year diversity plans. They're just introducing diversity 2.0. So it's kind of like the, you know, Soviet Union or China, yeah, when they have these five-year plans for an ideal communist society. They're doing these five-year plans for an ideal diverse university, I guess. But as you mentioned, there's a lot of progress being made in the opposite direction, scaling this back in places like Florida and so on and other states. And, you know, Chris Rufo is kind of at the forefront of that. So there's progress being made, and I think we've kind of turned the corner towards bringing a lot of attention to this in both higher education and in the corporate world. And, you know, we've got like Ed Bloom, who's bringing lawsuits against DEI initiatives in corporate America. You know, I'm doing this in higher education. I've filed now more than 900 complaints for more than 2,000 violations. So there's some progress there. So I just think going forward, it's a little bit more balanced now. And, you know, I think the Michigan and Virginia, places like that, will be a stronghold, partly because in Michigan, the legislature has very little control over the public universities there. It's a unique kind of system, whereas in Florida and other states, the legislatures have a lot more power and control over the funding. So, you know, Virginia, Michigan might be kind of strongholds and outposts. The rest of the country, I think, is moving in the opposite direction, which I think is a great sign.
I saw that you recently, as you mentioned, the complaints that you filed one against UNC Wilmington over their LGBTQ swim only program.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is just like, it's like the universities are obsessed with segregating and separating people, almost like in the tradition of the KKK, to have everybody separated and segregated, whether it's for swimming in a pool or for being in a classroom to learn algebra. So they, you know, and I'm sure none of this is so pervasive and widespread that they never even think when they come up with a new idea like this that, hey, maybe we should make sure we should get legal clearance from the Office of General Counsel or something. So whoever had the bright idea, they were going to shut down the entire pool at UNC Wilmington and have an LGBTQ plus only party that was exclusively for transgender, non-binary, and queer UNCW folks. So I filed, I found out about it and filed a complaint with the Office for Civil Rights, and then used that complaint as a basis to share a courtesy copy with the Office of General Counsel and the Chancellor and President and everybody at UNC. And within a couple days, after it had gone through a legal review, which it should have gone through in the first place but didn't, they changed it to just an LGBTQ plus pool party. Not, they left out the only. And then the description was that it's an LGBTQ plus pool party for UNCW folks. So this happens all the time. And that's another strategy I use, is get the complaint filed with the Office for Civil Rights. Use that as a way to get the attention of the university lawyers, who are usually not very sympathetic about breaking federal civil rights laws. So I can often get some pretty fast turnaround, like in this case, within about 48 hours, by getting the university lawyers involved after the complaint's been filed, when they should have really been consulted before the program was even you know, initiated and advertised and promoted. So that's an example of a success I've had recently.
And they went through with that pool party, right? I mean, it happened.
Yeah, they did have the pool party last Wednesday from like 5 or 6:30 or something.
Did you attend? I'm just kidding, too soon. But now there's an issue at Mundelein High School. Can you tell us what's going on there?
Yeah, you know, I got tipped off there, and I think that was after the situation at Evanston Township High School District got kind of exposed partly through your program, and then I filed a complaint. But then Mundelein, I was tipped off there that, again, just in the tradition of the Ku Klux Klan almost, that they were having identity-based social support groups that excluded and separated students based on race and sex. And then they had a BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, People of Color staff affinity group that was going to restrict participation to only the school staff who were Black, Indigenous, and People of Color. And then they also had a Girls Who Code program that was restricted on the basis of sex to only girls. So, again, I'm sure none of that went through any kind of legal review. So after it was brought to my attention, I filed a complaint last summer, and I just got notice a few days ago from the Chicago Office for Civil Rights that they had investigated the complaint, and the school district now had agreed to open up all those, the support group, the staff affinity group, and the Girls Who Code, that those are all open now to all students, staff, regardless of sex and race. So, again, some progress there. But only after they get caught do they then realize that they're in violation of federal civil rights laws and their federal funding is at jeopardy. And then they make the changes after they've been exposed. But they, you know, unfortunately, they don't monitor their new programs ahead of time, get legal clearance, because, again, it's so widespread that they all think that this is okay.
Well, right. I mean, they're righteous in terms of their segregating by race or sex or sexual orientation or what have you, sexual identity, whatever, because, I mean, so that it's righteous. So what does federal law have to do with anything? We're rallying for the marginalized. I mean, the Evanston Township High School, just to refresh people's recollection, special AP classes for Black students, special AP class for Latino students with special assistance that will be provided for Black and Latino students, but not for white students or Asian students or anybody else, because they're not a marginalized population. And they just do this by the seat of their pants because, again, they're just, you know, feeling their way through life. And this is what we're supposed to do, to be allies with these disadvantaged populations and so forth. That's the extent of the thinking that goes on.
Oh, that's right. I mean, they're under the false assumption that there's an exception to federal civil rights laws if you have good intentions and you're discriminating in favor of what they would think are the right groups for the right reasons. But Title IX and Title VI are very clear. There is no discrimination allowed regardless of the intentions. And so Evanston Township, again, you would have to think of, well, would the Ku Klux Klan approve of their original course design? And the answer would be yes, that because they had separate sections for Black students, separate sections for Latinx students, and then I guess the white students would be in the other sections. So again, they thought that was a good idea, complete violation of federal civil rights law. They got caught, and so now they've revised their eligibility in kind of a sneaky and disingenuous way, because they realize they can't say this course is restricted to students who identify as Black. So now they're saying this is a calculus class, so they're learning college calculus. And the course is going to emphasize examples that some individuals in the Black community identify as shared experiences when they're learning about logarithms and trigonometry and exponential functions and so on. I'm not even quite sure what shared experiences in the Black community would mean here.
Well, of course, they're going to harm the people that they're trying to help because they're so upside down intellectually. But, I mean, I just want to make this clear, too. This is nothing against free association, people getting together voluntarily, private institutions. This is about state-sponsored, financed, separate but equal. And that's the problem.
Well, yeah, and that's how Title IX and Title VI are written, that if you're a recipient of federal funds from the Department of Education, then you have to actively enforce Title IX's prohibition of discrimination on the basis of sex and Title VI's prohibition for discrimination on the basis of race, color, or national origin. So you accept that money, then you're under a legal obligation to actively enforce federal civil rights laws, but they take the money and then they violate the federal civil rights laws. That's the problem. That's my motivation to file 926 complaints against these universities and K through 12 schools that violate their legal obligation and responsibility to enforce federal civil rights laws.
Enforcement of the federal law. It's such an antiquated concept. Mark Perry, Emeritus Professor of Economics and Finance, University of Michigan, Carpe Diem blogger for the American Enterprise Institute. Mark, thank you as always.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you. Have a great day. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.